We are back on the Bengals Beat podcast. I'm Lindsay Patterson alongside Cincinnati Bengals Inquirer beat writer Tyler Dragon and a newbie. He's actually going to be jumping on and helping us this summer and fall covering the Cincinnati Bengals. He has a few awesome pieces you're going to want to check out on Cincinnati.com right now. Charlie Goldsmith. How you doing, Charlie?
I'm doing well, thanks. Tyler, Lindsay, excited to be on this podcast with you guys.
It's nice to have you on, Charlie. Tell the fans a little bit about yourself.
I am from Cincinnati originally. I have spent the last 3 years covering Northwestern football and basketball. I've also been following the Bengals closely for a while, and I'm excited to be here.
We're going to hit the ground running, you guys, because there's still been a pretty active offseason for the Cincinnati Bengals. AJ Green, it became official, and honestly, I feel like, Tyler, we have talked about this plenty of times, and all signs pointed to the Bengals sticking with the franchise tag, no multi-year deal as of now. I personally agree with it. I think it's a smart move. If we would have seen just maybe 10, 12 games out of AJ Green last year, I think it would have made sense to maybe, you know, make more of this conversation serious, make it a multi-year deal, and think of maybe a short-term extension. I don't know how I feel about long-term right now with a guy who's still injury-prone. I know what he's proven to this organization, but I think the franchise tag was a good move.
Yeah, you know, AJ Green expected this to happen months ago. I mean, even during last season, he expected the Bengals to franchise tag him, and he was, you know, assuming that he would play this 2020 season under the one-year franchise tag. And he said he's not going to miss out on $18 million. In fact, he's going to make $17.9 million this season. And no, he's not happy about it, but he said he will play under the franchise tag begrudgingly. And, you know, the Bengals have some trepidation because of his injuries, his history, as you alluded to, especially that season-ending left ankle injury on the very first day of training camp. I mean, that was a devastating blow for not only AJ Green, but for the Bengals and their chances for the 2019 season. So coming off an ankle injury, and then you had the toe injury a few years ago, and then you had the hamstring injury. So he's had some lower body injuries in the latter portion of his career. So when you look at that and, you know, his long-term future, he turns 32 at the end of July. So the Bengals, they're a little bit hesitant to, you know, commit to him long-term because of his injury history. But they are of the mindset that when healthy, AJ Green is still an upper echelon receiver. And the Bengals believe older receivers age well. The Bengals believe top flight receivers age well. So that is a good prognosis for AJ Green and the Bengals. But, you know, money talks, and right now they're just comfortable with offering him that one-year deal.
Bouncing off what you said, Tyler, there is literally zero precedent for what AJ Green is about to do this season. AJ has over 8,000 yards. For any receiver who has over 5,000 yards in their first 8 years, there are only three guys who have ever come back. One was Randy Moss, who retired when he was well past his prime and was done. The other was Plaxico Burress, who missed significant time from football for off-the-field reasons. And then there was Jordy Nelson, who did recover, but it was only in his fourth season that he suffered an injury. So there is no precedent for a wide receiver coming back from as frustrating an injury as an ankle injury can be. And as you both have mentioned, there are legitimate questions that have to be answered once he sees the field, because we don't know what we should expect.
T. Higgins, you draft him, you get him in round. Tyler Boyd, you extend him. He's done a great job of stepping up when they didn't have AJ Green on the field. Tyler, is that the future in the wide receiver room?
Well, you would hate to put that much pressure on T. Higgins. I mean, he hasn't played one snap of NFL football yet, so I don't want to say he's the heir apparent to, you know, a future Hall of Famer in AJ Green. But the Bengals did draft him for a reason. They have high hopes for him. They like his versatility, both on the outside, and he can play some inside. They like his catch radius. He has a big frame, and he attacks the football well. And then his after-the-catch skills are also something that the Bengals are really high on. So they have pretty high hopes for T. Higgins and what he can do for the Bengals. And, I mean, what can you say about Tyler Boyd? Back-to-back 1,000-yard seasons, one of the best slot receivers in the NFL, most reliable receiver the Bengals had last year, and you can make the case the year before. So Tyler Boyd, I expect another good season out of him. I expect him to eclipse that 1,000-yard mark again as a receiver. And, yeah, he's one of the leaders of the team. The Bengals paid him handsomely last year for a reason, and I expect good things from him going forward. And that's going to be one of Joe Burrow's favorite targets. I can say that off the top right now already.
Looking long term, if the Bengals are to become a team that is contending in the AFC in the next few years, the route to that really is an elite offense around Joe Burrow. So as you've mentioned, Tyler Boyd and T. Higgins have to be the most important players. Probably one of them has to make a leap to a top 10 to 15 wide receiver in the NFL if the Bengals want their offense to reach that status. Tyler, you mentioned some of T. Higgins and Tyler Boyd's strengths, but if the Bengals want to get a top five, top 10 offense in the league, there's a lot of development that we'll have to see for sure.
I'm going to stay with the offense right now, you guys. I mean, Titans, they went heavy with Henry yesterday. He gets a four-year, $50 million, $25 million guaranteed. I'm feeling a certain way about running backs. I don't feel they're a dime a dozen. I know we've talked plenty about Joe Mixon and getting a contract done, and honestly, I feel COVID has come into play. Tyler, have you heard any more about this, and are you agreeing with the Titans paying Henry?
You know, I'm partial towards running backs, and, you know, they touch the football the second most on a team. When it comes to Derrick Henry, he was the leading rusher in the NFL last season. He's, you know, a downhill runner, and he pretty much carried the Titans to the playoffs and even have that one playoff win. I'm always of the mindset you pay top-flight running backs, and Derrick Henry is obviously one of them. And when I think of Joe Mixon, I don't think anyone would argue that Joe Mixon is a top 10 running back, and he's a difference maker on the field. I think he's a top 8 running back, in my opinion. So when you have a difference maker, you want to try to keep them on your franchise. Running backs aren't a dime a dozen. If that were the case, then you would see 15 to 20 running backs a year rushing for over 1,000 yards and having, you know, 10 touchdowns. You don't see that. They're not a plethora of 1,000-yard rushers every single year, and they're not a lot of running backs who you can give the ball to 25-plus times a game and feel comfortable with. Joe Mixon is one of those running backs. Derrick Henry is, of course, one of those running backs, and that's why the Titans – gave him the money that they did.
And no one's arguing that Joe Mixon is Derrick Henry. Henry is a very rare running back, someone who literally carried a team on a playoff run to the playoffs. It was his offense more than it was Ryan Tannehill's. Now, as much as we talk about the Bengals offensive line and the plethora of weapons around Joe Burrow, I wouldn't say that Joe Mixon will become the focus of that offense in Cincinnati the way that Derrick Henry is indisputably the focus of the Titans offense.
And I think it's similar to Christian McCaffrey. Those are two different types of running backs than Joe Mixon. I mean, what Christian does to that offense, and the same thing with Derrick Henry. The only question that I bring up, though, is when you look at the running back class, it doesn't go in Joe Mixon's favor. All of the guys who are free agents next year, if they do not get extended and the draft class is loaded, I mean, we don't know what's going to happen with college football. And I'm just saying right now, the speculation and reports that if they do move college football to the spring, a lot of these guys probably aren't going to play and they're going to be ready for a draft. I just don't feel like it falls in Joe Mixon's favor. Tyler, are you hearing any more about the contract talks?
I'm not hearing much news, and, you know, no news is no news. I've said before many times in previous podcasts as well that Joe Mixon wants to be paid like a top flight running back, and, you know, in his mind, he's one of the top five running backs in the National Football League. And he should think that way. And he was a key cog in the Bengals offense last season, rushing for over 1,000 yards. Rushing for over 1,000 yards. So, you know, when I think of Joe Mixon, and if I'm the Bengals, I do try to pay him handsomely. But there's some give and take there. And, you know, they have to come up with a compromise. And the Bengals spent a whole lot of money this offseason on free agents. And to their credit, they want to improve. But also in that aspect, when you have a rookie quarterback, you want someone he can rely on in the backfield. And Joe Mixon is that caliber of running back where Joe Burrow can rely on him in the backfield. And he would very much so help Joe Burrow this season and many seasons to come.
And you can see why the Bengals and Joe Mixon might have a difference of opinion when it comes to salaries, because the running back position is so stratified financially between the different tiers of runners. So you have five guys making more than between $12.5 million and $16 million. Those are Derrick Henry, Le'Veon Bell, Ezekiel Elliott, McCaffrey, and David Johnson, who negotiated that contract back when he was in that tier. Then after that, the next six or seven running backs are in the $7.5, $8 million tier. And that's where Joe Mixon probably ranks, if you rank the running backs out 1 through 10, as you mentioned. He's the eighth guy. He'd be, you know, around $8 million. But if Joe is really seeking that top five salary, then he is completely jumping up into that $12.5 million, $13.5 million tier. And that's a major difference.
I actually got this on Twitter, and a lot of people have brought this up because, look, we don't know if there's going to be a season. I'm the optimistic one and thinks there's going to be an NFL season due to all the money that's going to be made. I feel we're going to see it no matter what. We might not see college. We'll see the NFL. Caleb Prophet asked me on Twitter. He said, question about the AJ and Joe Mixon contracts. If it's the worst case scenario and their NFL suspends the 2020 season, are both free agents or do the deals roll back for another season? I mean, there's a lot of question marks. Or even if Tyler and Charlie, if the season is, you know, paused and they have to restart it up, how does that work? And have we heard any more about the contracts if it does get delayed and we don't start on time and, you know, or there's a pause in the season?
Yeah, you know, if they play games, they're going to be paid for those games. But, you know, the cancellation of games, you know, the NFLPA – and the NFL, they're still negotiating out the particulars. And the main thing is how the salary cap is going to be affected next year if, one, there aren't as many games and the revenue isn't as plentiful as expected. So contracts next year could be greatly affected. But the NFL and NFLPA, they're still negotiating the particulars as far as contract language and what it means if they are going to cancel multiple games, if they're going to cancel the whole season, knock on wood, hopefully they don't. But yeah, hopefully those answers will come out in the near future because, I mean, obviously they have to because training camp starts on July 28th. It seems like right around the corner when the Bengals open up training camp at, you know, Paul Brown Stadium in their practice facility.
And the NFL is still the only major sport whose regular season hasn't been impacted by the coronavirus. We've seen with the NBA and the MLB in particular, Major League Baseball had to completely reopen its collective bargaining agreement and have months of negotiation to get ready to play. And the NBA could have had that situation as well, except the players and the owners were able to come to a quicker agreement. But in those types of negotiations, everything is on the table. In the NBA's collective bargaining agreement, even, you know, the one-and-done rule was on the table if they decided to really try to press for something in the negotiation for the return-to-play policy. So, as Tyler said, we haven't heard of a specific agreement yet, but if we get to a situation where it might not, there might not be games, then I would definitely expect a completely new, newly structured deal that would, you know, have specific terms for someone like Joe Mixon's contract.
It's interesting too for some of these players because I saw this on Twitter and one of the beat writers talked to an NFL player off the record, didn't give his name, but he mentioned the player was concerned. He said, look, if I don't play because I'm scared of COVID or any of the concerns there, and of course they're still talking right now with the NFL and the NFLPA, he goes, some other guy's going to take my spot. So I just feel like with the NFL, the competition's a little bit different. I don't know, and Tyler and I talked about this last week, I don't know if we'll see big name stars sit out The NFL's latest proposal to the NFLPA still includes two preseason games in 2020. The union wants no preseason games, testing frequently, injury protection for players who come in contact with COVID. They don't want any preseason games and, you know, daily testing. I think that that's extremely important. We still don't have answers. And I know numbers have changed over the last couple of weeks and just the month alone. So it kind of makes it a little harder. But the NFL and the NFLPA had a little bit of the benefit of watching how these other leagues handled everything from the meetings to the restarts. And I still feel like they're so far apart with training camp less than 2 weeks away.
Yeah, your feeling is correct. They are far apart and they need to make decisions here relatively soon because, like you said, training camp is right around the corner and it's going to be upon us before we know it. I can see them, I know, I hate to say this, and I know you're misoptimistic, but I can see them pushing back training camp till August maybe because they're still, you know, deliberating on the particular.
It is incredible how we've heard so little yet about a specific concrete plan considering the training camps in 2 weeks. You know, nobody, it seems, has any idea right now, so it's keeping us on our edge.
One of the benefits they do have right now, and look, the NFL, as I mentioned, it's money. They make money off TV. They don't have to have people in stadiums, and some NFL teams said it's going to be limited. The Bengals said limited, no tailgating. A lot of protocols that are going to happen. If there's no preseason, the NFL stadiums kind of get that benefit. But if there's no college football, they can move some of these games on Saturdays. They can move their schedule around, give you primetime NFL all the time. Tyler, are we going to see that?
Man, you're asking me a real tough question.
I know. Putting you on the spot.
So are we going to see no college football? College football has an extremely tough road back, too. I know probably all the conferences at this point have incorporated just conference games. And, you know, having those student athletes also go to school or possibly take online classes and risk being infected with COVID-19, that's a big risk. They're not getting paid like NFL athletes. So that is a gamble. I do believe if there's an NFL season, college football will make a way to have a college football season. It's going to be reduced tremendously, but if there's going to be NFL football, I think the commissioners and the college football across the country from the SEC to the Pac-12 to the ACC, they're going to try whatever they can to have a college football season.
Here's why I disagree with that. I think that the NFL and college football are operating under completely different rules, so much that you could have the NFL without college football. And here's why. For the NFL, you're really responsible for 53 players. If you can keep them healthy, keep them quarantined, then you can have a season. But college athletic directors and presidents of across the country have said, if there aren't students on campus going to class, then we will not have a college football season. Because if it's not safe enough for our students to be together, it definitely shouldn't be safe enough for the athletes to be together in similarly close proximity. A college has to worry about thousands of people. And if they're not attending class, especially because these players are amateurs, I see it really is unlikely that they will have them playing on game day. And in that case, they'd move it to a spring season once colleges are back up and running.
I think what's interesting about them, Tyler, and we've talked plenty about the linebacker room over the last couple of years, is Jermaine Pratt is a guy who's really had to step up last year. I mean, when they realized what their defensive linebacker room looked like.
You know, I think Logan Wilson has a chance to start maybe over Josh Bynes. I think Bynes is still the leader in the clubhouse at that other inside linebacker position opposite Jermaine Pratt. But, you know, Logan Wilson, who's a third-round pick, Bengals are high on him. He's a tackling machine. He's a sure tackler. But, yeah, the first four rounds, those players are going to play. Especially Logan Wilson. I mean, obviously the first two picks, we're not even going to discuss that. But we're going to start talking about third, fourth, fifth, sixth round. And, you know, for Akeem and Logan Wilson, I can see them making an impact in year one.
Logan Wilson's a unique guy in that he, heading into college, was a 195-pound cornerback who developed into one of the surest tacklers in college football. He ranks in the top 20 in NCAA history in tackles. So you look at what Lou Anarumo is trying to do. One, he has a ton of players in the secondary who are real playmakers. Your Sean Williams, your Von Bells, your Jesse Bates. And then what we're discussing is you need linebackers who can cover out in space. So one, Logan Wilson will get tackles. And two, he's trained from his experience as a quarterback, cornerback, of playing in space. And he did that frequently at Wyoming. So that could make him a really interesting fit in Cincinnati.
We're a couple weeks away from training camp right now, and all that's to be determined how that's going to look for some of the players and if it does start on time on July 28th. But the Bengals are getting a little bit of criticism right now because they're not signing any of their guys. And again, I mean, it's been a unique, weird offseason with COVID. Tyler, are they going to sign them next week?
You would hope, because you don't have to report to training camp if you're not inking that contract. I do believe that the Bengals will get their draft picks signed, and they will be out there when training camp gets underway. I just don't, in my opinion, I don't foresee training camp starting on time. And I know I hate to say that, but I just don't see that happening. But I do believe the Bengals are going to start getting their rookies signed.
I don't know how you could have training camp start on time right now. I mean, we are less than 2 weeks away from them reporting to their home stadiums right now. The NFL and the NFLPA seem so far apart. They did say there was testing last week for the NFL players, and around 70 of them tested positive. It still seems kind of like a low number, and there's still time to quarantine, and obviously there's going to be daily testing. But when it comes to the protocols, July 28th being a start date.
Yeah, especially when there's 72 players that contracted the coronavirus. It's not a lot in the grand scheme of things, but, you know, said before, I've never been in an NFL locker room where just one player was sick. That bug spreads around in the NFL locker room rapidly. So you really want to be able to identify who has the virus and isolate them and contact trace. And the NFL, they're going to have to do that. The protocols for this offseason are more important than any before. We've never been in this type of situation before. We always use the word unprecedented, and it really, really is. We're all in a pandemic, and we have to take it extremely seriously.
But Tyler, they've already ruled out jersey swaps, so we'll be completely fine.
Yes.
Yeah. Lindsay and I talked about that last podcast. That just seems so backwards to me. You can go out there and play a football game, tackle each other, sweat on each other, and when you hit each other, there's droplets everywhere. But, oh, after the game, let's socially distance after we were really doing the exact opposite for 3 hours prior. So, That is backwards thinking. I don't think the NFL thought through that very much. But, you know, everybody is just trying to do their best in what they think is the safest manner of handling things. Because, you know, we have never been in this. This is unforeseen territory for all of us. And, you know, the NFL officials, when they're implementing these rules, it's – you know, they're going at it on a whim, because it's very difficult right now to really kind of see how the virus is spreading and affecting different people, and people they're asymptomatic or people that, you know, are really suffering symptoms. We really don't know a lot of information about this, and that's why they call it a novel virus.
You know, you mentioned the locker room, and not one person sick one of the guys gets sick. It's crazy, because when you think of flu season, it's obviously in the fall and the winter time. And I always remember just covering the NFL alone, if one guy had the flu, about 10 other guys had the flu. So if they're going to, how are they going to determine that? Are they going to do daily testing, or are they going to say, well, this guy's not feeling well today, he needs to go home right away, and it could be just a flu? So I think when you get into fall and the winter time, it's going to be really crazy how they decide on, you know, does the guy stay here, or we got to wait for his test to come back. And sometimes it takes a little over 24 hours. So that is going to be insanely crazy, because as we mentioned, when you look at an NFL locker room, It's really hard to socially distance these guys. I mean, even if you did every other locker, you have the showers, and I know that they might be like Major League Baseball where you don't shower after practice or after the games, and you know, you just leave as soon as possible. The training rooms, just the doorknobs of going out to the field and practice and everything that you're touching. I just don't know how they're going to do that and decide, you know, how they determine the protocols and what's going to work for this season. And they have a lot of decisions to make. And it just seems like we're not getting a lot of information. And to the NFL's credit, because I actually talked to Bill Polian about this earlier this week. And I said, Bill, they've had plenty of time to come up with this. And he's like, well, not really, because of the numbers changing. So if the numbers don't look any better in the next 2 weeks, I don't see both sides agreeing to everything. And Carlos Dunlap even put it on his Instagram the other day. He was out there training, but he's like, I don't even know the protocols. I'm putting my body on the line. I'm training right now. I'm ready to get back. So these guys are going to speak up, and I don't think a lot of them are going to head straight to training camp if they don't know what's going on. And obviously they have to come up with a deal soon. Pro Football Focus, one of my favorite websites. You got to go check it out. Austin Gale, one of my favorites, breaks down the film. But the guys put out a piece last night. That was one of their bold predictions, that the Cincinnati Bengals, they said if the AFC East only has one team go to the playoffs, which I think that's going to be a fun division, then the Cincinnati Bengals have a shot. So I look at the AFC North. Big Ben is coming back. I still feel like their defense, they really lit it up last season despite their record. Cleveland Browns had a pretty active offseason. I think they'll get better. They have a new head coach. I think most of that had to do with some of their coaching, and I don't think Baker will have a terrible year like he did last season. I think the Baltimore Ravens, obviously I'm not breaking any news here. They're one of the teams to beat in AFC if it's the Ravens and KC at number 1 and 2. I think it would be hard in the first year for Joe Burrow. I mean, after just a strange offseason, new pieces on the defensive side, an offensive line that's still trying to prove itself with the addition of Jonah Williams. I don't see this team, and look, we'll do regular season breakdown when we get closer to it and all of those predictions on where this team's going to be and the record. But at the moment, I do not see this happening. What do you guys think about this bold prediction?
I love before the season, everybody gets these, you know, hot and cold takes and say, oh, well, this team has a shot. Really? All 32 teams have a shot in June and July. that doesn't make any sense to me. It's I get it. We live in a hot takes culture. For the Bengals making the playoffs, I agree with you, Lindsay, shockingly, that it's going to be tough for this team in the AFC North division to supplant the Baltimore Ravens, who are Super Bowl contenders, Cleveland Browns, who should be better, and then, you know, Pittsburgh Steelers. Yes, Ben Roethlisberger is getting a little bit long in the tooth, and their overall offense has lost a lot in the last few years with Le'Veon Bell and Antonio Brown, but they are still a viable competitor in this division. And when you have a team like the Bengals, they're a year removed from tying their worst record in franchise history. So from going from 2-14 to a playoff team, that's a huge leap. Now, we've seen that movie before. San Francisco 49ers had a similar terrible season when Jimmy Garoppolo got hurt, and then they ended up getting in the Super Bowl the next season. But as far as the Bengals, it just seems like it's almost delusional to think that they will reach the playoffs. But I'm not saying that it's impossible. I just think maybe 2 years from now, or, you know, after this season, the Bengals can start thinking about, okay, we can be a legitimate playoff contender. Joe Burrow has a year under his belt. Maybe A.J. Green is A.J. Green and they extend him. Same goes for Joe Mixon. Maybe they give him a 3-4 year deal and they bring the band back again. And then you can see them starting to click and starting to build some camaraderie and taking that next step, which is entering the playoffs. But a positive step for me for the Bengals this season is finishing 6-10. I think that's a realistic goal for the team, and a record where, yes, is disappointing. Any record below 500 is disappointing, but it is a step in the right direction, and that's all you can ask for when you have a rebuilding team.
And my perspective is that now I can probably say there's only three or four position groups where the Bengals are probably in the top half of the league, probably defensive line, running back, and then maybe you could argue receiver or the secondary. This season's about, one, developing Joe Burrow, and two, finding one or two other position groups that can really develop into strengths for the Bengals. There are too many weaknesses right now to be a playoff team, but Tyler's 6-10 plan, that sounds like it would be a step forward.
Nobody wants to hear this, but honestly, the fan base has to realize it has to be patience. I mean, you might have your franchise quarterback right now, but there's still several spots that this team needs to rebuild on, and that offensive line is still going to be something, even with the addition of Jonah Williams. One thing I don't want to happen, though, we don't need this team to finish last, because we do not need this Trevor Lawrence, Joe Burrow, what do? You get the pick. I mean, I don't want to hear that, guys. That can't happen.
Oh. Really can't. Don't even existence right now. Don't put that in the atmosphere. That would be.
No, this can't happen. I can't deal with that. I can't deal with that social media. Like, the people are like, what do? Trevor Lawrence is there, but you have Joe Burrow. Nah, not going to happen. Honestly, it has to be patience. And again, I hate to say that to a fan base that has had patience for a really long time right now, but the AFC North is going to be strong. I don't see this team. I think 6-10, I mean, goodness, 7-9 would be a win, but anything to bounce back from 2-14, it's just an odd season, and it's going to look weird. I mean, we don't know if there's going to be fans in the stadium that could benefit a rookie and Joe Burrow on the road. All that's to be determined. But Tyler, you have an awesome piece on Cincinnati.com. What's up there?
Yeah, I have a couple of new pieces up there. I have a story on Tommy Smith and his time with the Bengals. Not a lot of people realize that he played a few seasons with the franchise, three, and appeared in one game. Appeared in two games and had one catch for 41 yards against the Oakland Raiders. But if you're not familiar with his story, he's an Olympic champion and protested at the Olympics and got ostracized for it, unfortunately. So go on Cincinnati.com and check out that story. And also the AJ Green news with the Bengals and he and his team not finalizing a long-term deal. We have wall-to-wall coverage of that event that did not happen on Cincinnati.com. So check it out on the website.
Charlie has his linebacker piece, Logan Wilson. Charlie, what else are you working on?
I've spoken to AJ Green's former strength coach, who surprisingly expressed some concern about AJ coming back from this ankle injury next season.
Make sure you're following along on Cincinnati.com. You can find us over on Twitter, ENQ Sports, on Instagram, ENQ Bengals, and we'll be back next week on the Bengals Beat Podcast.